Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us today. They say that women today are launching new businesses at twice the rate of men, but statistics show that they're not generating anywhere near the kind of income as their male counterparts do. Regardless of whether you have your own business or want to start your own business, or whether you go out to work for someone else every day, you'll want to hear what today's guest has to say on The Girl's Guide to Building a $1 Million Business. My guest today is Susan Wilson-Solovic. She's the co-founder, CEO, and chairman of SBTV.com, smallbusinesstelevision.com, the first and only video news and information site for America's small businesses. Ms. Solovic has appeared on CNN News and Early Today and is a featured small business expert on ABC America This Morning. She's also the co-host of Succeeding in Your Business, broadcast on voiceamerica.com. Susan Solovic was selected as one of the most influential women in St. Louis by the St. Louis Business Journal and was honored with the 2007 Women Impacting Public Policy President's Award. That's quite a mouthful. She's also the distinguished recipient of the Stevie Award, which she accepted for the most innovative company on behalf of SBTV.com. And she's joining us today to talk about her latest book, The Girl's Guide to Building a $1 Million Business. Susan Wilson-Solovic, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Vicki. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and I'm very glad to have you here. I really enjoyed reading your work. I was telling you before we came on the air, it gave me a little shot in the arm.
And I love to hear that.
Yeah. So let's tell our listeners why you wrote this book. I read that you wrote this book because as a small business journalist and successful business owner yourself, you were alarmed by the fact that fewer than 3% of the country's women owned businesses gross $1 million or more.
That's right, absolutely. Of course, I've always been passionate about helping women succeed in their careers and in starting businesses. That's really important to me. But having lived and built a multi-million-dollar business myself and then hearing these statistics, I really wanted to investigate and try to understand what the disconnect is for women, because we know that women, as you mentioned, are starting businesses at twice the rate of their male counterparts, but there so few of them actually grow to over the $1 million mark. In fact, even more alarmingly, only 800,000 gross more than $250,000 a year.
Yeah, that's the number that shocked me the most, too.
I know. So I wanted to say, okay, what's the problem here, and how can I help women understand that they can build successful, sustainable, amazing organizations?
So describe the book to us. Excuse me, I have allergies today.
Oh, that's all right. It's that time of year, isn't it?
It is, it is. Describe the book to us in your own words.
It is actually divided in two parts. The first part really is what I call the attitude adjustment. It is helping women overcome some of the mental obstacles and issues, relationship issues, fears, concerns about building a multi-million-dollar organization. And then the second part really goes into the tactical and strategical aspects. And the book isn't intended to be a how to start a business. It's really a how to build a significant, sustainable organization.
Mm. On your website, sbtv.com, you have some great webcasts, and I was watching one of them over the weekend, and I don't recall the guest's name, but she said that her father had been in his startup business for 30 years, and I think that's a situation that a lot of people get into. They start their business, and it never really grows beyond that first year or two.
Right, exactly. Most businesses fail or flounder in mediocrity, not because they think too big, but because they don't think big enough. So there's a huge difference, Vicki, in between creating a job for yourself or creating a real business enterprise. A lot of people go into business because they're really good at creating a certain product or offering a certain service, and they say, I'm going to go into my own business, but then they wind up doing everything themselves. The whole business is about them. And if they're not doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it, then it doesn't get done.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when you're building a business, yes, you have that passion, and yes, it's because you really are good at something, but a growth enterprise is one that becomes larger than you. It has a life of, it takes on a life of its own, and you'll always be the strategic director and the visionary as long as you're the CEO and the founder of the organization, but you want that business to be able to go on even if you're not there.
Right. And you wrote this book not just from your perspective and your experiences, but you also interviewed a lot of women for the book. Do you know how many women you interviewed?
Oh, my. I don't know exact number, but I would say it's probably around the 100 mark.
Mm.
And the reason I did that, Vicki, is while I have built a multi-million-dollar organization, I know there are so many women who also have built really substantial multi-million-dollar enterprises. And one of the problems that I see for women is the media portrays women business owners either as these micro-enterprises, home-based businesses, cottage industries, or the mega millionaires like the Martha Stewarts and the Oprahs and the Rachel Rays mm-hmm. of the world. And there's so little press on what's in between. So I wanted women to say, hey, you know what? I know a person like that. That woman's just like me. So if she can do it, why can't I do it?
Right. And that's what made the book so inspirational. Reading
yes.
other people's perspectives and reading, you know, how many times they heard no or how many times they were told they, you know, their idea was stupid or they hit a brick wall and they just kept pushing through.
Sure.
Why do you think at this time so many women are leaving employment and starting their own businesses?
Well, there are a lot of reasons. Of course, there's always still the pay issue. There's still inequities in pay and opportunities to really break through that, you know, glass ceiling, although it's getting better, but it still exists. But I think one of the biggest reasons is, despite some of the lip service corporate America gives to making sure women have opportunities to go up the ladder in corporate America, we're still seeing that there's a traditional business paradigm. And that traditional business paradigm doesn't really take into account a lot of the nuances that impact our lives as women, whether it be raising children, whether it be caring for elderly parents. There are lots of issues that impact our lives, and we as women still are responsible in most cases for most of the domestic activities in our homes.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to still be a contributor to the in-business environment, still be able to create or to earn an income commensurate with our skill levels and to provide what we know are smart and creative ideas to the workplace, women are leaving that traditional business paradigm and they're starting their own businesses. Not that they want to work less. In fact, most of them work more. It's just that they work hours that are conducive to their lifestyles and schedules.
And that's so important today. That's so important. In your opinion, Susan, what qualities do you think make a successful woman entrepreneur?
I think a number of things. First of all, women certainly have to have the confidence because there are some systemic issues that still are biased against women, like access to capital and access to markets and technical resources. So you really have to have confidence that says to yourself, number one, I know I can do this. Number two, I recognize there might be some gender bias in the marketplace, so I'm just going to have to be a little better prepared and a little bit better educated, but I can deal with it. It's only an obstacle. It's not the end of the road. So it's confidence is huge. But then you also have to have that determination. You have to know that there are going to be some ups and downs, there are going to be some bumps in the road, but you're going to be determined and focused and constantly going forward, learning from anything that doesn't go right, and going forward and willing to do the hard sweat equity that it takes in order to grow a business. And then also, finally, you have to be disciplined. You know, one of the things that I think all of us can be guilty of, myself including, is we're great procrastinators. And you'll come in and you know, you've got to go through and clear out your email box, your inbox, or you've got filing. Oh, I get all this stuff off my desk and get it filed away, and then I'll do X and so, you know, right?
Right.
So, but people people who are successful in business and growing their businesses have a discipline that says, I'm going to do something every single day that is moving that ball forward. It's just like, I don't know if you ever studied music or...
I did.
Okay, all right. Well, if you're learning to play an instrument, I personally played the piano, you really had to practice every day in order to keep enhancing your level of ability. Same thing in business. You have got to be disciplined to do it every single day to move the ball forward, or otherwise the week is all over and you look back and you think, wow, I didn't get anything done on my list I wanted to do. But you sure have a clean desk.
That's very true. And in fact, we did a show on procrastination last week. So if anybody out there is listening and that's their problem, you need to get in touch with me.
Yes, absolutely. There you go.
I want to dispel some myths, Susan, in chapter two. You call it Think Big and Bold. And
yes.
Let's dispel some of the stereotypical myths about successful businesswomen, that they're selfish, greedy, bad, and of course that B word that gets
right,
thrown
exactly.
around.
Right. Which I always say, if they call me that, I say thank you.
So what do you mean by think big and bold?
Well, women need to have the courage to really look out and say, I really do want to do this. I want to build a big, significant, money-making operation and not be embarrassed by it. And when you think that, that's the first step. The second step is to be able to tell other people that's what you want to do. And I think that we as women still sit back, and typically sit back and think, ooh, if I would say that I really want to build this kind of an organization and I want to be this successful and so on and so forth, as you said, Vicki, people are going to think I'm too aggressive or too ambitious or, you know, and heaven knows that if I would admit that I really want to make a lot of money, I would be seen as greedy. Mm. So that thinking big and bold is a really key component here.
Mm. In fact, you say, shout it out. I deserve to be successful.
Right, exactly. You know, I've joked with another number of the programs that I work with, and we've said, you know, they're like organizations mentoring and helping women build businesses. And we've said, the funny thing about women, we will talk about every intimate detail of our lives, but we don't feel comfortable talking about money.
Yes.
And some of my girlfriends and I have said, let's start a make money day. And on that day, we're going to encourage every woman to stand up and say, I want to make a lot of money. And let that be okay.
I want to make a lot of money. There you go.
That's right.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Well, you do have strong opinions on women and money. And you say in the book that you actually don't like writing about women and money because you don't understand why women continue to have issues with making money.
Right.
So what do you say to them if they're still thinking that way?
You know, I am just really, as I said in the book, I am really just amazed. If you look at the divorce rate in this country and you look at the fact that the average age of widowhood in this country is 57 years old. Now, that's not very old in my book.
That's not old.
And I look at women, and actually for a brief period of time, I practiced law. And I did a lot of domestic law, and I had a lot of women coming into me who had taken themselves out of the workplace early on in their marriages, or they hadn't worked at all. And suddenly they hit this point in their marriage where their husband decides they want out. They have no means to really support themselves, and they're looking at me saying, what am I going to do now? And I said, well, I really don't know, because alimony is almost a thing of the past. So... And then I've also seen women whose husbands died suddenly at very young ages, and the same kind of a scenario. And I think, when are women going to get it that if we're not financially capable of taking care of ourselves and certainly our families, what are we going to do? What do we expect? It's a sad thing about our society that society really kind of speaks out of both corners of its mouth, in that, you know, we certainly endear and praise the traditional marriage pattern of the stay-at-home mom and all of that, which is great. I think it's wonderful to nurture children, and I'm not taking anything away about that.
Mm-hmm.
But when something goes wrong, society isn't there to help pick up the baggage.
Right.
So being able, it doesn't mean that you have to support yourself in, you know, in a lifestyle of Donald Trump, but you certainly need to have enough independent financial means so that you're not becoming basically a charity case.
Right. Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, you talked earlier about confidence being one of the key success factors for women entrepreneurs. And I know that that's also one, lack of confidence is one of the biggest defeaters. So I want to talk about that when we come back from break.
Okay.
And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest today is Susan Wilson-Solovic. Her book is The Girl's Guide to Building a $1 Million Business. Please stay with us. We will be right back. I look up, you're standing next to me. What a feeling. What a feeling.
How many times have you been to your doctor only to walk away frustrated because you felt unheard? What happens when you just don't feel right but you're told there's nothing wrong, it's all in your head? Tune in November 26th for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and special guest Dr. David Clark. Dr. Clark has twice received the Top Doctor Award and may have some surprising answers for you. Check out conversationslive.net for more information or call Vicky at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. Tune in Mondays at noon for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
The Art of Constructive Living is alive and well on The Gary Mann Show, Tuesdays at noon. It's your personal power lunch with a variety of experts serving up fresh ideas to take you from where you are in life to where you want to be. Sit down to a banquet for your brain, and I'll pick up the check. Join me every Tuesday at noon for The Gary Mann Show, right here on Alternative Talk 1150 KKNW.
Are you fed up wasting time hunting for things or buying replacements because you can't remember where you put them? Need help getting your home or office space organized, clean, and clutter-free? Organization Plus will help you achieve your goal and save you time, money, and a lot of hassle. Organization Plus offers free phone consultation, in-home assessment and planning, and a full range of home, garage, and office decluttering services. They also offer services, maintenance, and more. Call Linnell at 253-507-2601. That's 253-507-2601 today for your free Organization Plus telephone consultation.
More talk, less rock. Come on, that's a good thing. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest today is Susan Wilson-Solovic. She's the author of The Girl's Guide to Building a $1 Million Business. But she's also the CEO and chairman of SBTV.com, smallbusinesstelevision.com, and a small business journalist. And Susan, I wanted to, first of all, let's go ahead and say I have a copy of this book to give away, and it's packed full of really good information for anyone who's wanting to grow their business or wanting to take their business to the next level. And so what I'd like to do is open up the phone lines on that and give listeners an opportunity to get a copy, win a copy of the book.
Great.
And what I'm going to do is let Mr. Eric Ryder choose the magic number.
All right, let's go for number four today. Lucky number four.
Okay, that sounds good. If you'd like a copy of this book, it's The Girl's Guide to Building a $1 Million Business. And as I said, it's packed full of information and terrific resources in this book, and tips from women who've made it and made their own multi-million dollar businesses. And of course, it was written by somebody who's developed her own multi-million dollar business. So our listeners need to call. Shall I give the number out? You give the number out.
I'll give the number out. Why not? As long as I'm throwing numbers out there into the ethers, I'll go ahead and say you can call us at 425-373-5527 or toll-free in Western Washington, 888-298-KKNW. That's 888-298-5569. And again, we're looking for caller number 4 to win a copy of the book today.
All right. Thank you so much. And Susan, before the break, we were talking about confidence and how important that is when you want to develop your business. And I know from reading your book that you say lack of confidence often defeats business owners.
Right.
How can women entrepreneurs shore up their confidence? How do they deal with that roller coaster of emotions they face when they're starting and growing a business?
Well, I think one of the things is you really have to learn to deflect labels that people want to put on you. Everyone in our lifetime, someone has told us something that we're no good at this, or you're fat, or you're a bad manager, or whatever. It might have been, you know, someone we've worked for or worked with. It might have been our parents. It might have been a spouse or a friend. But we've all been labeled as and being told certain things. And over time, you absorb that information, and it becomes a part of your psyche and your being. So the first thing I ask women to do is step back, look at yourself, look at what you know you can do, what your core competencies are, what your skills are, and deflect those negativisms that have been placed on us throughout the years. Not an easy task to do by any means, but certainly an important one. Then the second thing to do is, as you're starting that business, in order to gain courage, is to think back over your lifetime. Whether you have been a traditional stay-at-home mom or in the business and working career as an employee or whatever life stage you've been in or what experiences you've had, you have been challenged with difficult situations. And you have addressed those situations and you have made it through those situations. So by recognizing that you are smart enough to figure it out, and if you don't know what the right answer is, you know who to go or where to go to find the answers and the assistance you need to make a good decision. It may not be the decision that the results are exactly the way you want them to be, but you should give yourself the confidence that I have seen and I have conquered before and I can do it again.
Very good. And you say that women are particularly bad about seeking outside help, seeking advisors. And one of the suggestions you make is that people set up an advisory board. I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about that.
Right. I think that advisory boards are probably one of the most underutilized tools for business. An advisory board, just as the name would say, they're just advisors. They're not actually board of directors. So they don't have a fiduciary responsibility. There's no risk for them being involved in an advisory board. But what you can do is reach out and find individuals who have expertise or experience in areas that you lack and ask them to be part of an advisory board and then bounce ideas off of them, go to them for assistance. And by the way, most people are flattered when you invite them to be part of an advisory board. And they also then, as part of that board, gain a vested interest in your success. So it's like this wonderful resource of knowledge and experience that you can gain simply by reaching out and developing this group of individuals.
Mm. And you also talk in the book about separate friendship from business. So I'm guessing you wouldn't recommend we go to friends to develop our advisory board.
9 times out of 10, it's probably not a good idea. Couple of things. First of all, friends can often say what they think you want them to say and what they think you want to hear. Secondly, if things don't go right or there's a falling out or a misunderstanding, you can lose a good friend. And is it really worth that? So it's really you should be very careful about bringing in friends or family.
Okay. you say that this is difficult to talk about, but you believe it's absolutely necessary to discuss, and that is that relationships will change. And we hear that over and over again from business experts.
Yes.
What do you have to say on that?
Well, whether it's friends, whether it's family, whether it's a spouse, a partner, a significant other, whatever it may be, sometimes as you become more and more successful in your business, there will be people who either stand and applaud and they're proud of you and they're cheering you on, or else they feel compromised. They now feel inferior because you have made this bold step and made these bold strides, and they're still standing still. So instead of being happy for you, which sometimes they'll profess they are, but they can become rather toxic in their relationships with you. So they would rather try to pull you back or try to pull you down because they don't have the courage and the confidence or the plain get off the couch and go do it kind of an attitude. So they would rather try to take away from you than to do it themselves. So you have to recognize that. You have to recognize that there are going to be these different types of individuals. But what I say in my book is those who truly love you, those who are really your true friends, who are your true life partners, are always going to love you, and you're always going to love them back.
Very good advice. choose our company wisely.
Yes, that's right.
You have four strategic keys to growing your business, and I wonder if we could just spend the next few minutes going over these. And the first key, number one, is define the vision and mission of your company. And I know from past experience that many people get vision statements confused with mission statements. So
right.
I wonder if you'd clarify what you have to say on that.
Sure. A vision statement really encompasses a little bit of what we talked about earlier about thinking big and bold and being brave about seeing this opportunity and building something large. But the vision really is more than that. It's really about taking an empty canvas, if you will, and painting a picture of what you want your business to look like in the future. So how is it going to grow? How big is it going to be? Is it going to be international? Is it going to be this or that? But really getting this visual picture of this is what I see down the road. And then once you have that visual picture in your mind, being able to share it, to evangelize it, to be the storyteller about it, and get people to embrace it and engage with it, and actually adopting it as their own vision, that's very important. Whereas the mission statement is more about the present time and being. What is the mission of your business? What is the purpose? What its role in the community, to your customer and clients, to your employees? That's really the purpose of a mission statement.
Yeah, you say here one of the questions it answers is, why do we exist? And I think that summed it up really well.
Right, exactly. And what do you want to make sure that you are projecting to you know, your different constituent groups.
Mm. Now, you took your business from a startup and built it into a multi-million dollar business. How did you get that vision across to your employees? How do you make sure that that's integrated into every single day?
Well, we're very team-oriented here. We try to have weekly staff meetings, but those staff meetings often turn into more of the brainstorming sessions. You know, we embrace creativity here. We embrace innovation. No idea is shot down just simply because, you know, well, that's not the way we see it, or that's not we tried that and it didn't work before. I mean, there are always nuances, and we always are open to those sorts of things. And because we are doing something that's on the leading edge here and it's pioneering, which is internet television, basically, the people who come to work here are really jazzed about it even before they start working here. I had one young man who joined us, and he came in to fill out his employment papers the day he accepted the job. And when I walked around my corner to the reception area, he literally jumped out of his chair and hugged me, saying, I am so excited to be here. So, I mean, that makes you feel so, so wonderful. And the other thing that I did in my business, which I recommend to anyone who really wants to grow a large organization, is while I own the largest percentage of shares in our company, I have two partners who really complement my skill set. So one of my partners is the technology guru in our business. He's the one who's created all the architecture and all the great delivery platforms and such that we have on SBTV.com. My other partner is, heads up our sales organization and, manages our sales force and our advertising. And so he's responsible for making sure that the revenue numbers are met. So it's a great compliment, and we're certainly stronger together than we are independently.
Right. And that's critical to key number two, which is developing the right team.
Right.
And you say that as an owner of a small company can be one of the gang, but as you grow your business, you need to act, look, think, like, and be the CEO. What tips do you have to give on that?
Well, first of all, let me start with the team, and that is to hire smart, not fast. And I think that people who are growing an organization, particularly as you're right at that first employee cutoff or maybe the second employee, you start to get so overwhelmed and stressed out, and you think, oh my gosh, all of a sudden I can't handle all this, and your back is against the wall. So you reach out the door and grab the first warm body that walks by.
Mm-hmm.
And typically that doesn't work out.
Been there, done that.
I have too. So I don't know about you, Vicki, it didn't work out in my case.
No, you know what? And I kicked myself the couple of times that I did do that because my intuition was screaming, no!
Yeah,
and
right.
Overrode it because we needed that extra pair of hands.
Right, you do. You think, well, it'll work out. It'll work out. But typically it doesn't. And if you're planful about those hiring decisions and you think about what kind of a person and an individual am I going to need when I get ready to go to that next step, it's much easier to make a smart hire than it is just a fast and bad one. And then stepping up to the role of the CEO becomes necessary as your organization gets larger. And we have 16 employees now. And I have found that when we first started, I did everything from sitting in an editing suite to going out on shoots and doing reporting and writing and plus, trying to visualize and grow the company. And as we've added more employees, that was difficult for me to let go of because I started out in television news and I have a production background and I love the creative side of things. And initially I thought no one can do it better than I can do it. So I had to have my finger in everything. And then I realized that that is silly. I hired and brought in people to be part of this team because I believe in them and I know they're great and I know they can do things well. So learning to let go and say, you know what, I know that they can do it. It may not be exactly the way I would do it, but it's going to be done well. And I got comfortable with that. But the other aspect of that is when you're growing a smaller company and there's just a few of you, you're a very tight-knit nucleus, and it's like family in many respects. As you get larger, you have to step up, and not that you just become inaccessible, don't get me wrong, but you do have to distance yourself to a certain extent, and you take on a new role and persona within the organization, and I think that's particularly difficult for women.
Mm. Why do you think that is?
It's that nurturing and that's relationship building for women, and women take things typically and stereotypically more personally than men do. So stepping away from being one of the gang is a little bit harder, and yet you have to do it for the good of the company because the company needs to grow, and you need to be focused more on strategic visions and directions rather than down in the trenches on a day-to-day basis.
Right. And you talk about in the book how it's hard for women, many women, to delegate as well. Why do you think that is? Because that's obviously they have to do that to be able to step away.
Right.
There was a great quote in there that it said, one of the people you interviewed said, I had to work on the business, not in the business.
Right, exactly. I think it goes back to that feeling that it's kind of a guilt feeling. We don't want to push off work on someone else. We can get it done. We can do it all. Not a problem. And that's not true. You can't do it all. But also, a lot of women in my age category, which I'm 40-something.
good enough.
Yeah. they grew up in a corporate environment. And I remember my first assistant not only worked for me, but worked for two of my male colleagues. And I actually outranked them. but she was always more willing to do the work for the men than she was for me because I was self-sufficient. I knew how to type well. I could, you know, whereas the guys would blame, you know, they would blame, like, you know, well, I can't do that. And so that kind of played out. And I think there's a little bit of that carryover, too, that you just don't feel like putting off things on people when you know you are self-sufficient and can manage that. And right now, actually, I have not had an assistant since 1995.
Oh, really?
And I just hired one just last week, as a matter of fact. She started today. And I know it's going to be an adjustment for me to, you know, delegate to her. I've delegated other responsibilities, but my own personal items like booking my calendar and my travel schedules and setting appointments for me, et cetera, that's going to be a little bit tough for me, I have to admit. But I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I have to say that every time I've called your company, everybody is being extremely professional. And that's part of your branding. And that's what I want to talk about when we come back from a quick break. So we'll take a break right now. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. My guest today is Susan Wilson-Solovic. She's the author of The Girl's Guide to Building a Million-Dollar Business. Please stay with us. We will be right back.
Well, my heart knows it better than I know myself, so I'm gonna let it do all the talking.
If you have a dream, stop dreaming it and start living it. Tune in to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair on Monday, December 3rd for a discussion with Joyce Chapman, the Live Your Dream Coach, whose powerful work helped Vicki clarify her own dreams and redirect her life. Joyce Chapman is a celebrated dream coach, author, and speaker who has encouraged thousands to stop dreaming and start living. Don't miss Live Your Dream at noon, Monday, December 3rd on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for more information or call Vicki at 800-495-7617. Are your services receiving the attention you've earned and deserve? Is your business growing as quickly as you'd like it to? More importantly, is it as profitable as it could be? We know it's easy to get overlooked in the crowd. Let our marketing experts shine a spotlight on you and your business by delivering your strategic message to thousands of people in the Northwest region and thousands more via the internet. Learn how our expertise can help put your name out there and increase awareness of your business. Call Conversations Live today at 253-302-3286 or email info@conversationslive.net. That's 253-302-3286 or email info@conversationslive.net.
Commune with the Pop Oracle on the Radio 8 Ball Show. I'm Andras Jones, the host of the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer your questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them as the answers, like picking musical tarot cards. That's the Radio 8 Ball Show on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Don't miss the Radio 8 Ball Show at its new time, Fridays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150.
For the people, by the people. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my guest today is Susan Wilson-Solovic. She's a small business journalist and very successful business owner. She's also the author of the book, The Girl's Guide to Building a Million-Dollar Business. And before we go any further today, I want to announce the winner of today's book. She'll get a copy of Susan's book. And that is Debbie Smith in Kent. Debbie, thanks for calling in. Thanks, everyone, for calling in. And I will mail this out to you this week, Debbie. We had a lot of calls on your book, Susan.
That's wonderful. And by the way, if Debbie would like to send that book to me, I'd be happy to autograph it for her.
There you go. That's a good offer. Thank you. All right. So we're talking about the four strategic keys to growing your business. And I wanted to talk about creating unique market strategies and branding, which I think many people get confused. They think if they've got the business card and letterhead and a website. That's their brand. But it's so much more than that. And as I said before, when I called into your company, every time I called, everybody was extremely professional, which obviously is part of your brand. What do you have to say on branding?
Well, you made a great point there, Vicki. Branding is so much more than a logo or your stationery or the name of your company. It really permeates every single aspect of your business, particularly where those touch points are with your customers and clients. So, as you said, it permeates to how your phone is answered and how people treat incoming calls and customers and clients. And, you know, it even goes to how you, the CEO, present yourself in the public image. So how do you dress? How do you present yourself? Does it project the same brand essence that you want your company to project? So every single little aspect. And in my chapter on marketing, it is not the primer on marketing. It is not marketing 101 by any means. But it does talk about that incredible importance of branding and also about creating that unique value proposition. Because so many businesses start out and they're a Me Too business or they're a follower business. And they only get to a certain level. I always say they either, as I said earlier about another issue, they flounder in mediocrity or they fail. The businesses who really become wildly successful are those who are able to identify a particular need in the marketplace. So they look at the market, they analyze the way business is being done in the market currently, and they review that, and they find a problem. Or as we often say, they find pain in the marketplace. Mm. And then they figure out how they can deliver their product or a service to solve that issue, to create something unique to bring to the marketplace. And that's what makes them really wildly successful.
Good. And let's talk about funding, because that's also a very key thing. Obviously, every business needs money to grow. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about, including inclusive in this, is that many women undervalue their own worth. And you do address that in the book. So would you share your view on securing funding, Susan? And then,
sure.
Then we can look at that afterwards.
Well, the first thing is, if you're going to grow an organization, there will be a time that you are going to need additional capital, whether it be a loan, whether it be an equity infusion, whatever. You cannot continue to grow an organization by just reinvesting the revenues of the company or using your credit cards or family-friendly funding. You're going to have to really have a serious infusion of cash to get to the next level. So the first thing you need to do is just educate yourself about financial markets and what type of lending or equity instruments are available to help you grow your business. And you need to become careful or comfortable with those different types of financing. And you also need to get to know people in the financial community. You need to network. You need to go to events where you know that bankers and lenders or angel investors or venture capitalists will be attending, and get to know them, because it's like any other industry. If you have a relationship and a rapport with someone, they're going to be much more receptive to working with you when you are in a situation that you need funding. And also, this is really an amazing thing about financial institutions, bankers in particular. They're always willing to give you money when you don't need it, if you're profitable. But if you do really need it, they're not so happy about that. So it's really a good idea to get credit when you don't need it. So take out a loan in your company name. Show that you can pay it off. Show that you are responsible and that you are a good credit risk. And then when you really do get in a cash crunch and you really do need that capital to grow, they'll be much more willing to take a serious look.
Mm. Many people, when they're starting their business or when they're growing their business, don't pay themselves because they think
right.
They have to make these kind of sacrifices. In fact, you talked about this and how you did this yourself.
Right, right.
But, you know, at some point we have to pay ourselves. And as women, we do tend to undervalue our worth. So I wonder if you'd share your ideas on that.
Right, you do. When you're growing an organization, and particularly if you're adding staff and you're so afraid that, oh, maybe I won't make payroll, it's real easy to just kind of mark yourself out of the picture, particularly if you're in a situation where you have additional income coming into your household and it's not as critical at that moment in time that you be paid from the business. It's easy just to make that sacrifice. So I was actually, as we were growing our company, I was bragging to a friend of mine, actually someone from my publisher, and I was saying, wow, and we became profitable and, you know, all this. And I was so proud, just like a beaming parent. And she looked at me and she said, yeah, but are you paying yourself? And I looked at her and I said, well, no. And she said, well, then you're really not profitable, are you? And I thought about it, and I thought, you know what, you're right. And so we made the decision at that point in time, by golly, we are going to pay ourselves fair market value, because that's when you have a real business,
true.
Is one that can afford to pay you what you're worth.
Very true. And you talked a little bit earlier about networking, the importance of networking to get to know people for funding and stuff. But it's also, networking goes beyond that. And I've heard this with many of my colleagues, and you also say this in the book, oh, I don't have time to network.
Yes.
And there's a great saying by Harvey McKay that I love, and he says, dig your well before you're thirsty. Get those contacts in,
right.
Get those network built before you need it, just like before you need your funds.
Right, exactly.
So I wonder if you'd talk about networking, what you've learned over the years, and how it works for you.
Well, one of the most amazing things that I hear, and actually I used to teach a women's entrepreneurial training course at a local college, and a woman came up to me after class one day and she said, you know, I went to a couple of networking events, I handed out my business cards, I met people, and, you know, I didn't get any business out of it. And I looked at her and I thought, wait a minute, she's missing the whole point here. And I said, networking is about building a relationship network. It's about having people that you can reach out to and ask a question, and maybe they aren't the right answer, but they know someone, or maybe they know someone who knows someone who can help you. But more importantly, to make networking work for you, it is important that you give first. You always want to be ready and willing and able to give, and then it'll come back to you multifold. It's not about immediate gratification. Networking is a process. And it's an ongoing building process.
Yeah, and I went to a networking breakfast 3 or 4 weeks back, and it was one I hadn't been to before. And I swear the first 5 people I met shoved a business card and a brochure into my hand before they'd even said, hello, how are you? My name's whatever. What's your name?
Right, exactly.
And so that kind of defeats the object, because instantly I just wanted to throw them away.
Well, and the thing of it is, if you don't spend that time to connect and learn about each other, and you just, you know, jam that business card or brochure in someone's hand, you've just kind of wasted your time, because you want to connect with somebody where there really is an opportunity to work together, where there really is some benefit for both parties to connect and to learn more about each other's businesses, et cetera. In fact, one of my friends in New York, he won't give out a business card, nor take one, unless there is a true sense of opportunity to help each other or to transact some sort of business.
Mm. And when you go to network meetings, I think often you don't have, you may not have a strong connection with the person there in your business, but they may know someone who knows
exactly.
Someone else, and that's how it builds.
Yeah, you know, I've heard it said, you know, you just kind of put it out to the universe.
Mm.
And when you're a good networker and you build those relationships, it's like having this army of marketers for you out there. I mean, it's great.
I want to talk about something that's very important, I think. And you talk about this in your book. You had a very valuable lesson in your own words, and that is stay true to yourself. You talk about you wanted to get to the next level and you took a contract to take you there, and it was a huge mistake.
Right, exactly. It was an unbelievably large contract. And I mean, when I first was, you know, said, hey, we got the deal, because I had someone representing me, and he called me, actually, I was on vacation in Cabo, and he said, are you sitting down? And I said, no, should I? And he said, yeah. And he told me, you know, and what the dollar amount was, and thank goodness he told me to sit down. But I got into the deal, and my contract, actually, I was supposed to report to someone in this company's corporate headquarters. As it turned out, they had hired another independent gentleman to actually manage the overall project. Well, he got involved, and it turned out that he was the most unethical person I think I've ever met in my life. He was a bully. He would yell and scream at me. He would lie. He would switch gears. I had to document everything. He would call me at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, kidding.
And wake me up and ask me where something was and, you know, scream at me. And I just got to where I was just physically drained and upset and constantly on pens and needles. And I just decided one day, I said, you know, this is not worth it. And I called the person in corporate headquarters who'd signed my contract, a gentleman who I'm still friends with and I think the world of, and I said to him, you know, I have three principles I live by in business: respect, integrity, and professionalism. And they are all being compromised in this situation, and therefore I respectfully resign from your contract. And of course, he said, oh, no, don't do that. No, I'll fix it. You won't have to work with him. And I said, look, I didn't call you as a tattletale. I said, I called you. I understand the consequences of my decision, and I want to move on, and I wish you the best, and c'est la vie. So that's what I did. And luckily, I made that decision because it was only a few months after that that the opportunity to really start and grow SBTV.com came along. And had I still been mired in that horrible, horrible situation, I wouldn't have seen that opportunity.
Mm. Funny how that happens, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You just really, you just can't compromise yourself.
Well,
the only person who really loses, or, you know, you're the only person who really loses in that situation.
Absolutely, absolutely. How did you decide to start SBTV.com? Because it's such an interesting concept.
Right. Well, actually, a friend of mine who was sort of a mentor for a while had trademarked the name SBTV.com and was doing some sort of more like small business focused but infomercial type things. So, for example, if there was a story about a business who had successfully utilized financial strategies to grow their business, you know, they might, and this was sponsored by Merrill Lynch, there would be something in there about the Merrill Lynch accounts and the, you know, an interview with the Merrill Lynch rep and the, you know, so it was all kind of sponsor-oriented content, I guess is the best way to say it. So I actually bought the rights to the name from her and some of the video that she had shot, and then we really shut the business down. And my partners and I started to talk about what are we going to do with this. And my idea and my vision was there is no electronic media, mass media, that focuses on the needs of small business. And that's what I wanted to create. And the best and most inexpensive way, and also the cutting-edge way, was to create television on the Internet for small business. And so we rolled out the business model then in January of 2004, and that's really the birth of the SBTV you see today.
And now it's a multi-million dollar company.
Right, exactly.
Well, I have to say congratulations. And
well,
also,
thank you, Vicki.
Yeah, and also, Susan, thank you so much for joining us today. You've given some really great information. It's a great book, and I certainly enjoyed it, and I hope our listener enjoys it.
Thank you, Vicki. It was really a pleasure talking to you and to your audience, and I hope we stay connected.
Yeah, and I want to give out your website again. Please, listeners, whoever's listening today, check it out. It's really, it's got some really good information on there, some webcasts that I think you'll find useful, especially in the sales and marketing area, and that is sbtv.com.
And we also have our community, our social networking site, too. And, of course, everything is free for our audience members. So we look forward to their participation.
Great. Thank you. Thanks. And, of course, my guest was Susan Wilson-Solovic, her book, The Girl's Guide to Building a Million-Dollar Business. And I want to thank everyone for listening in today. You can share feedback on today's show with me at conversationslive.net, or you can call me at a toll-free number, which is 800-495-7617. And I'll give that again, 800-495-7617. And that brings us to the close of today's show. I want to leave you with a quote, which I really liked, from Eleanor Roosevelt. I found this in Susan's book. And she said, it takes as much energy to wish as it does to plan. So I'm going to wish you all happy planning. And thanks again for joining us today. Stay tuned to find out what's coming up next week. And please join me next Monday at noon for more Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
How many times have you been to your doctor only to walk away frustrated because you felt unheard? What happens when you just don't feel right, but you're told there's nothing wrong? It's all in your head. Tune in November 26th for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and special guest Dr. David Clark. Dr. Clark has twice received the Top Doctor Award and may have some surprising answers for you. Check out conversationslive.net for more information or call Vicki at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. Tune in Mondays at noon for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.